What if the very system designed to lift people out of poverty is actually keeping them there? Across America, millions of people face this contradiction daily, trapped between the security of government assistance and the dignity of work. Phil Harvey and Lisa Conyers spent years traveling the country, sitting down with over 100 welfare recipients to understand their lived experiences. What they discovered challenges everything we think we know about helping the poor. This isn't another policy wonk's Titus filled with charts and partisan finger-pointing. Instead, it's a deeply human exploration that reveals a troubling truth. Our welfare system, built with the best intentions, has created invisible walls that prevent the very people it aims to help from achieving independence and fulfillment. People on welfare desperately want to work, not for appearances, but because meaningful employment provides purpose, structure, and self-respect that no government check can deliver. Cora, a teacher on the Pine Ridge Reservation, observed that employed community members sit up straighter, their chin comes up, they carry themselves with pride. Terry, living in a Seattle tent encampment, captures it plainly. "I would much rather be working, at any job, than living the way I live right now." Research confirms this instinct. Studies tracking single mothers after 1996 welfare reforms found those entering the workforce reported significantly higher life satisfaction, even in menial jobs. Yet the system punishes work relentlessly. Frank faces a brutal calculation. Earning over $500 monthly would reduce his food stamps, and temporary jobs could bounce him on and off assistance repeatedly. This is the welfare cliff. Benefits decrease so steeply as income rises that working more often leaves people financially worse off. America's welfare system has expanded dramatically, even as objective poverty has decreased. Walk through most low-income neighborhoods today, and you'll see houses, cars, televisions, computers. The visible markers of destitution have largely disappeared. Yet spending continues to skyrocket. Over half of all anti-poverty benefits now go to people above the official poverty line. Following the 2008 recession, states raised qualifying income levels to 200% of poverty, meaning individuals earning $20,000 or families of four making $41,000 can receive assistance originally designed for the desperately poor. Federal welfare spending now exceeds $700 billion annually, surpassing defense spending. This creates perverse incentives. As one Seattle tent dweller explained, "Washington has better benefits, so I moved here." The system's flaws run deeper. Official poverty calculations exclude food stamps, housing vouchers, and medical care when determining eligibility, while underground economy earnings remain invisible. This explains why consumption patterns between officially poor and middle-class families show smaller differences than income disparities suggest. Resources intended for the truly destitute spread across a larger population, diluting effectiveness while creating dependency among those who could otherwise support themselves. Young single mothers can calculate how much each additional child increases their benefits. Over 300,000 babies are born to teenagers annually, with 90% to single mothers, and about 80% of teenage mothers ending up on welfare. Mother-only families face a 42% poverty rate, and 40% of U.S. babies are born out of wedlock, ranging from 29% for white mothers to 72.5% for African American mothers. Political scientist Lawrence Mead notes that inequalities stemming from family structure now far outweigh workplace inequalities, while Nicholas Kristof observes that growing up with one biological parent reduces high school graduation chances by 40%. The welfare system creates powerful financial incentives for single parenthood. To receive TANF and WIC benefits, applicants must have at least one child, with mothers receiving $322 to $454 monthly per additional child. Many couples maintain separate households because combining eliminates benefits entirely. Rosie, a young Bronx woman, lived with her mother for 3 years after marriage, while her husband lived with his mother, both in subsidized housing. Moving in together would have disqualified them from housing benefits and reduced food stamps by $28 monthly. Child support payments are deducted dollar for dollar from the mother's benefits, with money going to the state, not the child. Despite over $800 million spent on marriage promotion programs since 1996, these initiatives have failed because economic incentives point in the opposite direction. Joe, a partially disabled construction manager, could work part-time, but fears losing his benefits due to complex earning rules. His situation illustrates how disability programs create psychological and economic barriers, preventing beneficiaries from returning to work. Nearly 19 million Americans are enrolled in disability programs, with costs reaching $260 billion annually, almost $1,800 per working American. Both SSDI and SSI recipients can work only 9 months at certain income thresholds without losing disability status. The calculations are so complex that fewer than 2% leave the system for employment annually. George, receiving $16,200 yearly, takes a seasonal job earning $2,000 monthly, but must quit before his 10th month to avoid losing benefits, deliberately sabotaging his employment to maintain healthcare and income. A disability industrial complex profits from this system. Law firms earned $68 million in 2012 by taking 25% of back payments. Companies are paid by states to move people from state-funded welfare to federally funded disability. Children classified as disabled have quadrupled since 1990. 1.3 million now draw payments. Nicholas Kristoff reported parents in Appalachia removing children from literacy programs to maintain disability status. Veterans disability enrollment surged from 2.3 million 2001 to 3.9 million 2014. Lieutenant Colonel Daniel Gade, himself an amputee, warns, "From an economic standpoint, you would be crazy to get a job." One program stands out, the Earned Income Tax Credit. President Reagan called it the best anti-poverty, the best pro-family, the best job creation measure to come out of Congress. Unlike other welfare programs, the EITC requires reported earnings to qualify, directly tying benefits to employment. About 40% of U.S. workers qualify, though only half claim benefits. While childless individuals receive just $487 annually, a parent with one child earning $10,000 can receive over $4,000. Research shows EITC expansions between 1984-1996 accounted for over half the employment increase among single mothers. Despite its success, the EITC has problems. Program complexity creates barriers. Many eligible workers don't file returns. Those who do often pay preparers $100, depleting their benefit. The lump sum structure encourages poor decisions. As one mother explained, "It kind of feels like Christmas. When you scrimp all year and then this big check shows up, it's hard not to just blow it on something." Fraud totals $13.7 to $16.7 billion annually. Still, the EITC demonstrates welfare programs can encourage work when designed properly. The solution isn't eliminating the safety net, it's rebuilding it around work. Central proposals include extending EITC benefits to childless workers and stopping income tax withholding so low-income workers keep more earnings immediately. FICA taxes, taking 7.65% from poverty-level workers, should be eliminated for low earners. An across-the-board wage subsidization program would increase low wages by 30 to 90%, transforming a full-time minimum wage job from $17,000 to $22,000 annually. All welfare benefits, except for the truly disabled, should require work or preparation for work. Private welfare offers advantages, more personalized, flexible, and efficient than government programs. While government welfare might make someone wait 2 weeks for a check to fix a car battery, losing a job opportunity, private charity can solve problems immediately. America spends over $700 billion annually on a safety net that has become a trap. Benefits decrease so steeply as income rises that working more often leaves people worse off. Staying poor becomes more rational than climbing out. The interviews reveal a consistent truth. People don't want handouts. They want opportunity. Earned accomplishment is fundamental to human happiness, and paid work remains the most common path to this fulfillment. The solution isn't cutting off the vulnerable. It's making work pay better than welfare, ensuring every additional hour of effort leads to genuine improvement. We've replaced the dignity of work with the security of dependence. If America is to remain a nation of dreamers and strivers, all citizens deserve the chance to earn their own success.